The Power of Sound, a Monocle 24 collaboration with KEF.
My name's Grant Kirkhope. I'm a composer. I've written music for tons of video games and some movie stuff. I worked at a company called Rare Limited back in the day in the late 90s, which was a very successful video games company. And I got to work on some of their games that turned out to be sort of giant sellers like GoldenEye, Banjo-Kazooie, Donkey Kong 64, Perfect Dark, things like that. The responsibilities for a composer in video games are you have to write the music that you know goes along with the game. I guess it's no different to anything else really, that you have to write some kind of visual media. Games can be a bit more complicated because you've got things like memory to worry about, or at least in the early days you had to worry about that. It's not so much an issue these days. But when I think back to, you know, working on the original Game Boy, which was the first thing that I ever did in 1995, and then, you know, within 10 years it was like working on a live orchestra. So it sort of came on leaps and bounds from that point. You know, the original Game Boy had four channels. It was three channels that could play one note each. And the fourth channel was just a noise channel, which kind of provided all the wacky noises for the effects and a basic kind of drum sound, you know. So you had to have a note that could be the melody, a note that could imply the harmony, and a note that was the bass, and that was it. So, you know, very bare, very stripped down. So that was my very first experience with video games. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be hard. Like I say, within 10 years, it was like using live orchestra. It was incredible how fast it moved ahead. And to this day, here we are using, you know, big giant orchestras or huge synthesizers or whatever. It's the sky's the limit now, but it wasn't back then. It can be brought in at any point, you know, near the start, near the end, in the middle, anywhere. It just depends how they want to do it. The creative director will share with you perhaps some video footage of the game. Perhaps you can play it. Perhaps it's just artwork. Perhaps it's just a paragraph on a page that describes to you what it is. If someone says to me, it's a frozen ice castle, you know, I'm going to be thinking straight away, you know, Glockenspiel, pizzicato strings, celeste, like things that sound spiky in my head, spiky, icy instruments. If someone says to me, it's going to be a lovely warm forest somewhere like in Lord of the Rings, I've been thinking about strings and bassoons and woodwinds and all that kind of stuff that makes it sound that way in my head. So even before you touch the keyboard, you've got some kind of idea what you're going to do with it. If that's going to be an orchestral thing, you know, if it's going to be a synthesizer, you'll be thinking about something else. You just shut your eyes and use your imagination, right? It is just telling a story in music. It really is. You know, I kind of feel like the images tell the story, but the music tells you how to feel. So that's the thing that I think makes music very important. Remember, people could be playing a level for a long time. You know, it could be hours if you're not very good, or quite short if you're really good. So, you know, they've got to hear that tune over and over again. So you've got to write something that's not going to get on people's nerves, which is, you know, is tricky. And you never really know if you manage it until it gets out into the world and people say it's terrible or good. So you just kind of cross your fingers. So the first game I actually worked on was GoldenEye, which was like spectacular for me. So I just got to Rare in 1995, and they were just the new console, the N64, was just about to come out, and they were writing games for it. So, you know, someone of my age, when I was a kid, the biggest thing of the year was always the Bond movie, if whatever year that was, you know, because they were always the biggest, the best effects, the best music, you know. So to get to write music for GoldenEye was just amazing. But the game came out, was a massive success. It sold like 10 million copies. So it was, you know, pretty crazy that I got, that was my first game. Ridiculous, really. So, you know, when you see people play stuff like your game, it's, I don't know, it's like a really amazing thing to see people, you know, play it and like what you do. I guess I didn't really get that, really, even until I moved to America in 2008. And I don't think I really got how big video game music had become until that point. How would you know that was going to happen? Like, I'd done, you know, when I worked on the N64 and done GoldenEye and Banjo-Kazooie and games like that. And then it came to the next console, which was, in fact, I think the next console actually was the Xbox 360 that I got to write the first orchestral score for. There was a game called Viva Pinata, which is kind of a gardening game. it's not quite that, but it's you have to train animals and all sorts of things like that. It's a very relaxing game. And so I wanted to write this really relaxing kind of pastoral score, like in my head, in the kind of in the vein of Elgar or Vaughan Williams. And we got to work with a live orchestra, which I couldn't believe. So that was my first time I ever did it. I went to record in Prague with the City of Prague Philharmonic, which was, you know, just spectacular for me. You know, to think that here's me, you know, like a Judas Priest fan, you know, you know, sat in the control room saying, "Excuse me, cellos, bar four, you're a bit too loud." You know, it's a little bit weird. And also, you know, you tend to shed a lot of tears at that point, because it's to hear real human beings playing your music. There's absolutely nothing like it, because all the kind of finesse you might do in your MIDI mock-ups that you do to, you know, you have to write music in the first place, so it sounds like the orchestra. All that stuff you do, you just can't. Human beings just do it naturally. That kind of slight crescendo, slight diminuendo, the phrasing, all that stuff that they do without thinking about it. That just is spectacular. You know, in that game, I actually got nominated for a BAFTA for that game, which was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, you know, it's all those things that you keep using your kind of superlatives to say, how did that happen? But it really was just spectacularly amazing. I mean, not only to end up with an orchestra, but then to get a BAFTA nomination, you know, didn't seem right somehow. So when it came to Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, you know, I was going to be the first Western composer to ever write for Mario. So that was a bit scary. Well, a lot scary, actually. And I really thought that I wouldn't be able to do it, because that game was about Ubisoft. So they've got the Rabbids are a very big character for Ubisoft. And of course, Nintendo, Mario is their biggest IP. It's probably, you know, I guess Mario is probably like Mickey Mouse, isn't he? Everyone knows who he is. So I had to find some way of combining the kind of Mario sound with the wacky Rabbids and a bit of me, stick it all together and see what comes out the other end. You know, that's what I did. Nintendo are protective of Mario, and rightly so. I mean, thankfully, they liked what I wrote. I did have to use some of... Koji Kondo is the composer that's the kind of the famous Nintendo composer that's written for Mario since the 80s, forever, you know. So I had to make sure that I was respectful to his music. So I did use some of his... a couple of his little tunes in the game. And I had to kind of rearrange them and make them orchestral and make, you know, the way I did it. And they liked them, which was great. It's funny, I had to do some of the little kind of game over, little stingers that you hear in games. I had to do orchestral arrangements of them. And one of them was the kind of Mario's famous game over tune. I had to rearrange it for like orchestral instruments. And I did it, and I got a little message from Nintendo saying I had to pick it up by ear, because, you know, I did it by ear from the games, like Mario games. And I got some of the harmony mixed up. I think it wasn't wrong notes, just parts in different registers. And I got a little message from Nintendo saying, you know, "Dear Mr. Kirkup, we love your arrangement of the Game Over theme, but could you just maybe change the harmony to this?" And they sent me a little bit of sheet music, which was the little Mario ditty. And it's one of those moments you kind of hold in your hand that bit of paper and say, you know, I've just got sent from Nintendo this legendary little thing that everybody in the world knows, you know, on a bit of sheet music to look at. It's one of those kind of spectacular moments you kind of remember for all your life, you know. That is like super humbling, right? To think that, you know, like I did Banjo-Kazooie in 1996, something like that, and it's still, you know, hugely popular to this day, like 20-odd years later. That is like incredible, you know. You know, you don't think about it at the time. You just sort of write, do your best, hope, and hope for the best, you know. And I do think that, like, you know, that something that I learned sort of quite recently, really, is that I feel like when we're kids and whatever we do as a kid, like, you know, as I say, my favourite TV shows when I was like in that kind of 6 to 15 bracket or whatever, I can't really think of the bracket, but like something that kind of school, that kind of age, you know, you will remember all those theme tunes and the lyrics forever until you're in your box, right, at the end, you know. It's one of those crazy things that we all have that, whatever it is, theme tune in our head forever, but you're never going to lose it. And I think that that started to strike me that people who are now 30-something or whatever, or, you know, 35, 40 even, who played my games, games that I worked on, still remember that stuff, you know, note for note, you know. They even remember stuff that I forget. So for any artist of any persuasion, right, whether you're like a writer, a photographer, whatever, a musician, you know, for anybody in the world to like something that comes out of your head, even one person, I think that's spectacular. But to get several thousand people to get that thing that came out of your head, it's just like, it's unquantifiable. I can't really put it into words. It's just such an amazing thing. So I feel like super lucky that I was and parts of people's childhoods. It's nice to be remembered, you know. Sometimes I get really touching emails where a kid at the time, the parent was dying of cancer, and they sat on the bed with them playing Banjo-Kazooie or some of those games, you know, and that game, when they play it, it takes them right back to sat there with the parent. I mean, I think that's just such a nice thing. And, you know, you'd never think about those things, but when I get those kind of emails, it, you know, it sort of really, it breaks your heart and it warms your heart at the same time. You think that at least that Banjo-Kazooie moment, whatever it is, when they laugh with the mum or dad, whatever it was, who was, you know, not very well, takes them right back to that moment, you know. Often people send me videos on my Twitter thing, you know, of the games that of mine that they played maybe when they were kids, and they got their little kid, little five-year-old playing it, you know, things like that. And that is, that in some respects, that is the best thing I ever see. You know, it's just like to see, because I think little kids, or even, you know, bigger kids, you know, they don't care about what's cool, right? They just know what they like. And I think that's the purest form of that thing. You know, and they, you know, to see little kids get off on stuff that I write, it's just fantastic. I mean, I really feel like that's what it's all about. And so from that to the big concerts, it's just, you know, I never thought it would get to be this. When I first started on the Game Boy in 1995, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be fun, you know, with lots of bleeps and boops. So who knew? In popular music to this day, I think you do hear an awful lot of kind of game music influence these days. It's all over the place. There's lots of rap tracks that have like sampled games. There's a lot of that, even a lot of my stuff too. You know, I think that video game music has become like a giant force these days. It is gigantic. I mean, the fact you've got orchestras now touring the world just playing video game tunes, and they sell out everywhere they go. You know, some of the kind of major orchestras in the UK and around the world have realised that if they do video game concerts, they'll sell it out, and it may finance them playing less popular music that needs to be heard for the rest of the year. You know, so I think that's a really special thing. And these video game concerts are like spectacular events. Like, you've got great huge video screens. It's a bit like a gig, really, a proper gig. People are cheering, and, you know, it's not like a classical concert. So, you know, I really feel that video game music has reintroduced people to just purely instrumental music. So I think people are realizing that there's a great wealth of, even put aside the 8-bit stuff or that, just purely orchestral music, if you want to go that way. There's a huge wealth of orchestral music in video games that is as credible as classical music. It really is. I really feel like video games will be the classical music of the future. Music in games is it's a big force, you know. And I think that slowly but surely people are realizing that there's a great wealth of good music, you know, every genre, from 8-bit right up to live orchestra and everything in between, from metal tracks and rock tracks and pop tracks and everything. It's all in video games. So I do think the tide's really changing.